Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2017, number 24. And this is with Faith Goldie, an independent journalist of whom I'm sure you've all heard. She's definitely got a higher profile within our circles in the last few months. Well, within the last year or so, really. Hello, Faith. Welcome to the channel.
Merry Yuletide, Merry Christmas. Thanks for having me on, Woes. I'm really excited. What better way is there to spend your Friday night? Let me tell you. This is cozy. I've got my James Alsop-esque Baileys inside my coffee here. Very, very wholesome drink. And my vaporizer in case we go on a little long.
And a delightful Christmas sweater.
That's right. That's
Oh,
right.
it's skiing. It's skiing. I didn't know that. Right, okay.
It's very festive. Actually, I'm pretty sure Lauren Rose was wearing the same one. It's a bit of a meme when she was on the Millennial.
I didn't see it there. It was too dark. But yeah, I think it does look familiar.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about your own journey towards the dissident right. And we could start with let's say, well, how did it all begin? Where do you think that story begins?
Certainly, absolutely. Well, the idea of just nationalism in and of itself was something that I fought for basically since the dawn of my media career, almost 10 years ago now. And I think when it came, when the idea of all these big issues around immigration and what type of immigration and really the idea of a nation started to really permeate my brain was really probably in the run-up to Trump's election is when things first started, and when the ideas of the alt-right first started to become they basically were forced onto the chopping block and the idea schedule, so to speak. And I've always been someone, I mean, keep in mind that I back in my teens was essentially a crypto Marxist, and once I started to see the other as frankly a human, this all happened with my mom revealing the fact that she was a closet conservative for all of her life. But the left does such a great job of dehumanizing the other that once there was this very human element to the right, I all of a sudden was forced to listen to their arguments and realize that their arguments were better than mine. And I'm talking about hours and days spent in libraries trying to have better arguments than, conservatives at that point in my life. And so it was almost a similar mirrored evolution when it came to the dissident right, because as I started to study them more seriously, and actually about 4 months in advance of Charlottesville, when I was invited to come cover Charlottesville, is when I started to really in earnest study the alt-right and the dissident right, if you will, because like any story that I was to ever cover, I felt a responsibility to my subject and to my audience. And so I didn't want to be like all the CNN people who would go in there and just find the one guy with an armband and be like, aha, we have found our Nazis on the street. So I was like, okay, what did these guys actually talk about? And then you start to, stumble across all of, the bigger names, the Jared Taylors, Peter Brimelows, et cetera, and even Kevin McDonald's, and actually a lot of the VDR team had a lot to do with this, where I thought, wow, there is a very robust intellectual backing that this side of the spectrum has going on here. It's not just a bunch of like, angry teenagers in polo shirts, so to speak. And I was always obsessed with the idea of immigration. And as a Christian, I saw this Muslim like spiritual replacement happening across Europe, and it was unavoidable to talk about that. And basically, I reached this point in my research where I thought, okay, everything aside, I can irrefutably ascertain and admit one point: Western European peoples are being replaced. They are becoming minorities in their own homelands. And there was no way of getting around that point. There's just, you cannot get around that. There's no, sprinkling, putting lipstick on it,
The
so to speak.
only way to get around it is to say to yourself that it doesn't matter.
Right,
You can't deny
exactly.
that it's happening.
Right, and because I had, so much love for Western civilization, from its architecture to its philosophy to its political structures to even, its exaltation of reason, despite, my intense faith, it does matter. It does matter. If you love those things, then it does matter. Otherwise, we are going to inevitably become mini Afghanistans, which brings me to my next point and kind of what had been going on all along. So I'm part Ukrainian, part Greek in heritage. And every summer I used to travel to Greece. And over the past several years, of course, the nature of my trips there has changed dramatically to the point where this year I basically, you know, protested and refused to go. And I remember about 3 years ago, this is shortly after my mother passed away, my father and I were planning to go to this one island where we had these lovely memories of my mother. So we go to the ticket booth and we say to the gentleman, hello, we'd like 2 tickets to such and such island. And he said, oh, no, you can't go there. So what do you mean? He said, it's turned into a mini Syria. I said, well, we were just there like a little while ago. What are you talking about? And he said, no. Like if you even so much as offer these people a water bottle, if you're wearing a cross, they're going to throw it back at you. People defecate on the streets there. Like, it is not the island you remember. And that's when I realized, you know,
that,
I think that
this, this is something that I'm dreading, because when I have Italian roots, I'm a quarter Italian, mm-hmm. and we used to go to a little village in the north of Italy, and I'm dreading that I will revisit there one day and it, you know, it's going to be all Africans and Arabs. It's bound to happen. And, you know, but the way I remember it is as an idyllic, just like ancient Italian village. And God,
I mean, these are some of the, you know, cradles of Western civilization. These are places that have, you know, by the grace of God, been spared not just from war, but just from general erosion of, you know, just like human existence. I mean, we're talking about ruins, or as I like to call them, monuments that, you know, predated Christ by thousands of years, that I would walk across, that now are basically benches for like migrants. Like it's really despicable stuff, and they don't have any sort of care for their homeland. Now, you know, that being said, while I acknowledge my roots and I love my, you know, my fatherland, so to speak, Canada is my home, and I'm not a first generation immigrant by any stretch of the imagination. So this is my home. And then in around, I think, March of this year, I published a piece when I was back at the Rebel, it was called White Genocide in Canada. And perhaps it was a bit disingenuous, the term genocide, because, you know, there aren't bodies on the street, so to speak, but I was talking about how the white majority in Canada, which now stands at some 76%, which has declined, by the way, about 4% in the past 4 years, will be under conservative estimates of somewhere between 12 to 20% in less than 80 years. And when I saw that, I thought to myself, well, I live in a metropolis, which is a majority-minority metropolis. I went to University of Toronto, which is affectionately referred to as University of Tokyo. And I was in a liberal arts degree program for my undergrad. And even there, and not in the maths and sciences, I was a minority in the classrooms, for sure. I remember conducting these informal surveys whenever I used to go to our big library there, Robarts Library. My grandfather, Carpenter, helped build those steps, actually. That's something I'm very proud of. Anyway, so I remember conducting these informal surveys when I go up and down the elevators, and I'd be the only white female inside the elevator. And so, again, the civic nationalist will say, well, you know, or to quote Hillary Clinton, what difference does it make? Well, it does make a difference when you consider the fact that Sharia law has, in effect, come to Canadian shores here. We've passed motions that essentially say that it is forbidden to be Islamophobic. So what does that even mean? Well, they don't deign to define it, right? We have in Canada, in our multicultural society, which is destined to be majority-minority already, when we're still 76% majority in this country, there is a balkanization that has taken place, and there are cultural enclaves everywhere. And I've shared this.
What's the sort of makeup that we're talking about? You said that you were the only white female mm-hmm. in the elevator and so on, but what were the other ethnic groups involved?
Right. So I'm putting together a video which should be out tomorrow morning. I just finished taping it for my own channel. I'd urge everyone to go subscribe there. But basically, it's a future that America can anticipate as well. Because, of course, here in Canada, we rely on something called the point system. So we evaluate our legal immigrants based on a point system. So extra points are given to people with higher educations, with the ability to speak English, with more employment, you know, status opportunity, etc. So what that means is, rather than importing poverty, which is a lot of what the U.S. is up to these days, what we do is we import high IQ people. And if you've studied anything about the dissident right, then you know that the high IQ people really hail from Asia. And so if you just look at simple graphs of Canadian migration, since we've adopted the point system and an official multicultural policy, what's happened is that there's an inversion of our traditional sources of immigration, which were, frankly, the British Isles, Western and Eastern Europe, and America, to now the majority of our imports are Asians. And what this has essentially led to is for other people too, and keep in mind that even the non-Asians that we do bring in have higher IQs than the folks in their homeland. So for instance, your average Indian fellow in India would have about, I think, an 82 or 83 IQ. You bring them over to North America and they've got 106, which is higher than your average white European, right? So not only is it leading to a brain drain in countries that are in desperate need, and I say that as someone who's been to India and wish that someone would fix that place, we've led to a brain drain, but quite outside of that, what we've done is we've brought in all of these people who, I mean, leaving aside the Indian sort of regressions to the means, et cetera, but Asians who are just like a stellar and intelligent people, it's placed Europeans at a disadvantage in their own home countries. Because what you see is, as I've mentioned from my own anecdotal experience and what is, I'm sure, echoed in the hallways, the deep dark hallways of many universities across Canada, is that it's a disproportionate representation as a percentage of population of Asians within our institutions of higher learning. And of course, what happens thereafter is that those disproportional representations are mirrored in workplaces thereafter. So it's a real bizarre pickle, frankly, because, you know, you don't want the low human capital migrants coming in and leeching off of your entitlement system, but you also don't want to be edged out of the system, because you and I both know there will be no affirmative action for white people. There just won't be. Even when we become a minority, I don't have hope or any sort of faith, frankly, in our future overlords. And what we are doing with the immigration point system, which the U.S. is on the verge of passing through the RAISE Act, something that's actually supported by both Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump, is you're going to be importing an immigrant overclass. And people have to really ask themselves, first of all, who signed up for this? Who was asked whether or not we want this? And wait a second, does it actually matter? And maybe it doesn't. Maybe other people see it differently than I do. But I would argue that it does matter, because the character of our nation is changing, and the founding stock is perpetually being put at a disadvantage. First, it was the people who gave nutrients, so to speak, to this entitlement system. And now there are going to be people who, frankly, are going to be weeded out of the Ivy League schools and eventually the workplaces thereafter. And it's not about political programs or politics or any of that. It's just simple math and science. And
I mean, it's an interesting thing, because I got onto this with Sargon in our first hangout of Millennial this year, which, by the way, has now been banned in the EU for some, I don't know why.
Millennial?
Yeah, the first one with Sargon, yeah. People can't watch it in my own bloody country.
I take that as a badge of honour.
It's so ridiculous. But anyway, I got into this with him, and I outlined, okay, so East Asians are going to outcompete us in, you know, universities and so on. Ashkenazi Jews are going to outcompete us in the same realms, or different realms. And then blacks, Muslims, and Hispanics are going to outnumber us in the population at large. So how, in what way is this going to be good for us? I mean, that's one way to look at it. And of course, he do you know what his answer to that was? Well, I don't recognize an us.
But I mean, that in a way is symptomatic of what has happened to the white European male, right? Because in this spirit of individualism, we've sort of forgotten to sew in an identity into the individual.
I wish I had said to him, if you don't recognize an us, then who is it that's being outcompeted and outnumbered?
Well, and this is something that
obviously it does.
Precisely. But this is something I wanted to get into you with respect to the white male question, which is this: people who compete in groups outcompete those who go it alone. And regrettably, I think that the white male, in this intoxication of individualism, has forgotten to brother up, so to speak. And if you look at the impetuses for the furtherment of any sort of great civilization, you will notice that it has been a band of brothers, or as the Germans refer to it, a Männerbund, that has helped. And that is not to dismiss the family whatsoever. I believe that women should are able to foster a good home life so their men can indeed go out there and whether you look at Jesus and his apostles, to, you know, the French philosophers, to the great men of the Enlightenment, the German idealists, whoever you want to look at, it's a group of men that have come together and believe that they have the right idea for society, even if it's been the wrong idea, like the guys who led the Russian Revolution. So sorry to all the Nazguls on the streams, but like, there you are. They come together with a common idea for society. Of course, men with their usual instinct, their inherited instinct for competition will create a hierarchy within this male bond, and they will go forward and they will achieve their goals. And they are able to win precisely because they are a coordinated group. But what has happened is that we've brought in all of these different people into our homelands. We've allowed them to perform and act out on their instincts, their tribal instincts. So they have been acting as groups while we act as individuals, ergo our mass suicide in effect. And I mean that quite seriously, insofar as, you know, there's an opioid crisis happening in the US right now. White men are literally committing suicide. And it became so painfully clear to me this past weekend. I was in New York visiting the lovely Lauren Rose. And we had many fantastic talks, all of which I wish were just there for public consumption, because they really were something. But you know, I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we went and covered a protest together? There's usually, you know, some easy stuff. We either, you know, put great people with great ideas on camera or idiots with idiotic ideas on camera. Either way, it'll inspire people one way or another. And so I'm looking at all the various protests that are scheduled for New York that weekend. And this, of course, is in the wake of the Kate Steinle decision to let this felon murderer go free again. This is in the wake of that body cam footage that showed a young white man literally with his hands up, don't shoot, being pulverized by this overambitious cop. And there is not a single protest in support of either of those people or those causes. No white men getting together in the streets in support of white men. Now, you think about Trayvon Martin. You think about Michael Brown. I mean, how many cities were turned on, like, and put into headstands because their people, whether it was, you know, because of a true narrative or a fake hands up, don't shoot narrative, got to the streets and they were able to achieve their goals and able to, you know, move legislation and move world leaders and indeed start a nationwide movement. And so that's why, you know, love them or hate them, when it comes to, say, guys like Identity Europa, even this new thing that's come out, Operation Homeland, love them or hate them. So many questions about optics, go and have at it. I.e. were the only guys who, after Kate got out there, that I could see and actually had a bit of a rally in Washington. They're actually doing the work. And so I would call, like, you know, and I know that it seems rich. It's like, here's, you know, a female telling men what to do. I don't want, I'd rather, frankly, be cooking and cleaning, okay? I'm not going to lie. But I want as many men as possible to get pissed off, to go out there and do something, join an organization or help start an organization, because no one is going to do it for you. Literally, no one is going to save the white man except for himself. No one. No one is coming to your rescue. I was reading a piece today in Huffington Post, and it was talking about how millennials are the most screwed generation. I mean, it's a recycled headline. Everyone's read it before, and there are just different renditions as to why they're so screwed up, okay? And if for no other reason, it's finances. We've basically been edged out of the job market. We're half as likely to own a house. We're probably not going to retire until 75, if we're lucky. We're having kids later. We're getting married later, and yet we're like, keep on bringing the immigrants in, my diversity, my values. We're screwed. And if we don't do anything about it, it's only going to get worse. And there's only about the next 25 years that we're still in the majority and we can do something, anything about it. And I'll be honest, as time goes on, in order to reverse this, the solutions are going to become more and more drastic. And I don't want that.
Well, indeed. There were so many. I was expecting you to keep going on. I didn't realize you were about to stop. So you've caught me. You've taken me aback. This is definitely an issue because, as you say, there is learned helplessness among white men in the white man, and I think the idea that, well, actually we have to do something ourselves is sort of alien to people today. white people today. When white people mobilize for a cause today, it's always on behalf of some any other group, any group but them. And we don't feel that we have the right to mobilize on behalf of ourselves. This is a very strange, it's perverse situation.
The only time that I will see whites gather a number around a white cause is literally females for like pussy marches. That's it. It's unfortunate. We need to harness that power and put it towards something that's actually good, not fake allegations against the President of the United States. They're out there with like Hillary Clinton shirts. I'm like, Paula Jones, ever heard of her? Like, your girl's guy is actually the perv. But anyway, that's old news now. Like I said, no one is going to save us. And we have to understand that the stakes cannot be higher, because forget about our kids for a second. Forget about our hypothetical children right now. It's literally us who are in the crosshairs. And then when you actually, you know, fast forward 20, 30 years, I shared this story the other day on Red Ice about my friend who's not at all red-pilled, but is becoming red-pilled by life. And those stories are increasing by, you know, frankly, the day, because these stark ideas about tribalism, about what life is like as a minority in your own home, they become so blatant that they become hard to ignore, and you can't perceive them except as they are. My dear friend has a 2-year-old son who's been born of half Viking blood. He's got blonde hair and blue eyes, and he's in a very multicultural organized playtime group. And she said, you know, when the teacher, the instructor says, come out here, who wants to play with, you know, the balls, the dino bones, whatever it is, he's always the very first to respond, and he'll run right up. And she always gives him the item last. And I can't help but, why is that? Well, I don't know. And she said, well, I can't help but think. She's trying to, you know, basically unlearn any sort of white privilege that he might have down the way. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's so amazing what's happened, but these sorts of behaviors are now becoming programmed in us. And this was part of the reason why, frankly, I went to Charlottesville, is because the more I started to learn about the alt-right, the dissident right, call them whatever you want, the more I realized is that outside of, you know, the whatever, 10% like hyper-LARPing, maybe there's more, whatever, trolling and bully side is like just part of the online world, fine. But there was this huge majority of young white men who had in them a very, very, very admirable instinct and volition, and that was to do something about their circumstances. And their basis was very, very clear. I go to school, I go to work, and I'm treated like dog meat because of the color of my skin, because of my heritage. And if I say that I'm proud of my heritage, that I'm proud of my people, and that I want to secure an existence for my children and a future for my family, that somehow that's a race, it's an act of racism, right? And I thought, well, now hold on, because I know something of history. And I know that within the past, well, almost exactly 100 years, when young white men feel disenfranchised with society, they feel that it's headed in the wrong direction, and they get together in a bit of an echo chamber, at times things can get a little severe. You know, so I wanted to give these guys a fair shake. I wanted to have a real conversation with them and say, you know, leave the armbands, leave all that crap aside, and just talk for a second. Tell me what you're thinking, you know? And I was, to be honest, stunned at how serious some of these guys were. I mean, some of these groups have, many of them have reading lists, have, you know, these sorts of fraternities where they hang out, they get together, they talk about world events, they give presentations about historical events, etc. And they're not to be overlooked. And I think that it's been a grave, grave miscalculation by several individuals within the leading chattering classes to dismiss them all and to try to push these guys to the gutter where some have festered. But I do think that the majority after Charlottesville, there was a great conversation that happened after Charlottesville about the topic of optics and where do we want to go from here. And I think since then, it's been a beautiful process, frankly, of not redefinition, but clarification and distilling of, okay, what are we about? What are the winnable, you know, lines, battle lines that we can find ourselves on? Man, I hope it's winnable. I hope it is. And I hope it can be done so in a peaceful way where arguments in the Western way, so to speak, will persevere. But I mean, an immigration moratorium on all these countries today just would scratch at the surface of solving our problems. And that to me is a daunting, daunting idea.
Well, indeed, and this is why it has to be a cultural thing first. You're absolutely right. If we were to stop immigration, just cut it to zero right now, that would be a monumental achievement. We're nowhere near to doing that. So in the meantime, the numbers, I mean, it's terrible to say it, but the numbers are going to increase and increase. But the good thing about that is that it does, as you said earlier, red pill more and more people just in and of itself. You know, you can just let the numbers keep coming in and you can be guaranteed of more and more white people being awakened to the situation. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that in the meantime, we're not going to stop immigration. We're not going to cap it at zero. So there is what we have. This is what I keep coming back to. We have to literally change the culture. We have to reprogram the white race. And that is the task that I think will have more, that will enable us to do all sorts of other things down the line, like more political stuff, legal stuff and so on.
Look, the cultural Marxist and the globalist, if you will, has reprogrammed the white race over a period of some 40, 60 years. And so this is no small feat. The good news is that I think that this Gen Z millennial group, I mean, they're quick learners. And so I think we can do it in less time. And I think because the stark realities that they live in are just so jarring and they're only, like you said, going to get worse, that I'm hopeful, and I'm a little bit white-pilled on that, that the times they are changing even faster. But this cultural question, I mean, the good news is people are turning off their TVs. The good news is one of the greatest things to come out of 2017 for me, if you want to do like a highlights, you know, winners and losers, fumbles and touchdowns, one of the greatest things for me to come out of 2017 was the complete evisceration of both the media and Hollywood elite classes. These are two of the biggest roadblocks to achieving any sort of a nationalistic agenda. And I'm from the American and North American, I mean, Canadians are very much, we receive our culture by osmosis north of the 49th. And so for us, I mean, that was so fantastic because here are these, you know, kitty diddlers and these absolute leches that are the dictators of our cultural ethos down in LA. So that for me was fantastic. And so I think that there's certainly been a democratization of data. And with that democratization, there has been, I mean, I think it's something like 90% of all of the media organizations, so for the 49th, like I'm talking about the big cable stuff, is owned by some six companies, right? Those guys are like, I mean, they're not worth their own salt sort of thing. They don't matter anymore. And so in that sense, with this democratization of data, what's been allowed is less gatekeepers and more breathing space for truth.
Yeah, and it gives way to a sort of reorganization of the channels of communication.
And that's what we need, is a reordering. We need a reordering in society. We need a reordering of male and female, a reordering of the family, a reordering of the male bond, of a female, you know, role in society as well in its way. A reordering of, frankly, government. I think that people have to think very seriously about how democracy works once demographics change. I mean, Alabama for me was a huge black pill, quite literally, where, I mean, everyone last month was a Nazi. Everyone this month is a sexual predator. And quite outside of that, you see the black female vote basically determine who the senator of Alabama, like one of the reddest states that there are, is. And so, and you know, for the first time in 25 years, that place goes blue. And so I have a lot of hopes for the primaries that are going to be occurring through 2018. I hope that we see a shift there for many of the challengers. But I am, the biggest white pill for me is this, is that ethno-nationalism is on the rise, whether you want to admit it or not. For some reason, the media has called a lot of the movements populism, which I'm fine with. I think it's much more polite and palatable nomenclature. And so when you look at what's happened in the Czech Republic, in Hungary, in Austria, with even the National Front and AfD, these are ethno-nationalist movements. These are people who say Austria for the Austrians, France for the French, right? And so I think that zeitgeist will there will be an element of contagion on the other side of the pond, so to speak. And I do think that Donald Trump is our guy. While he's by no stretch of the imagination perfect, his mere election has been revolutionary. His mere election should have never happened. And so I remain in this trail of hope, frankly, through it, but not in like the Obama hope and change sort of crap. This is not just a war on the Democrats. This is a war, like you said, on the culture. This is a true search for a new order. I don't like saying new order because I sound like Henry Kissinger. A reordering, that is, to return to the old order. And I think, and it's obviously a challenge to the GOP and all of these people, like this false dialectic. It's been an illusion, the dialectic that politics has been for the past however many years, where it's basically foreign governments and corporatism that have been dictating both sides of the aisle. And we've been given this cake, guys, pick blue or red. It's, you've got a choice. Oh my gosh, isn't democracy great? It's like all of you idiots think the same damn thing. All of you idiots want the same damn thing. And none of it is good for us, the individual. So we got to start teaming up. We got to start, you know, deciding what we want in society. And that's what we saw happen with the election of Trump. You saw middle America say, I'm not going to take orders from the coastal elites anymore in New York and L.A. Thanks very much. Middle America, who's seen their, you know, emergency hospital rates go up by some 300% because their husbands are overdosing on opioids. And it's not just the men who are suffering. It's the women in the households who are suffering as well. And they're saying, you know, we're sick and tired. We're mad as hell and we're not going to take anymore. We got to get mad. We got to get mad. That's the thing. And we've become so desensitized. We've become so like just soy boys on chemtrails and GMOs. Just okay, give me another one, government. Okay, give me another one, Hollywood. Okay, give me another one, mass media. Just give me all you got. And we got to just freaking start swatting these people like flies. Not seriously, I'm not encouraging violence. What I am encouraging, though, is participation, for Pete's sakes. Participation is the very least that we should be expecting of each other. And let me tell you, it's a lot easier when you do it with a group. It's a lot easier when you do it with not just your family, but the buddy next door. And I will tell you that there is a zeitgeist. Because of my faith, I do believe that there is an illumination of conscience that's happening right now. I do believe that there is a rise in white male and female consciousness right now, and it's not a bad thing. And I know that there will be people who will see this who are perhaps not part of, you know, your usual audience, who will say, whoa, faith, like rising white consciousness, like that sounds so awful. Well, why is it awful? Tell me. Because when blacks talk about being black and voting for black candidates and voting for Democrats, like that's okay. Why can't we do it? I'm sick and tired of being told I can't do something because of my skin color. I'm sick and tired of being told to put someone else's interests in front of my own. And this is something that, I mean, the past 3 months I've spent so much time, Wolves, thinking about how to reconcile my faith with my politics, because I do not hate anyone. I do not have any sort of ill intentions towards anyone. I do not. But I remember that we are commanded to love our neighbors like ourselves. And we have stopped loving ourselves by ourselves. I don't just mean me as the individual, but ourselves, the us that Sargon apparently doesn't know about, the us, ourselves, our people, right? And so I want to love my neighbor. I'm going to love my neighbor, but I've got to make sure I love them as myself. I need to look after my own as well. And, you know, the Tower of Babel was used in the Bible to be an absolute that illustration of what hell on earth can look like. It's a multicultural society. I'm sorry, folks, but that's how you square that circle.
Yeah, I think that there is this. See, what's happened is that they've set this up so that white men, and it ultimately comes to white men, are being cucked successively every day. And you see, I think they thought... And it's worked for a long time, to be fair to them. They thought that if we do this slowly enough and we do it confidently enough and we guilt trip them when they complain enough, if we do that, then they'll never actually fight back. But the fact is that eventually a very large number of white men are going to know. They are going to realize what's been going on, that it's been deliberate, that it's been systematic, that there are forefathers voted against it whenever possible and were just ignored and demonized, and what the stakes are. And I think that it's, you know, just now you can still continue to delude yourself, but that window is closing.
And, you know, Saul Alinsky wrote about how the most powerful political weapon is ridicule. And we do indeed see that happening today. That's why they call you a neo-Nazi. That's why they call you a white supremacist. Like, I'm not, like I just said, Asians are smarter than white people. I'm obviously not a white supremacist, or if I am, I'm a really bad one. You know, Ashkenazi Jews are the smartest, like, highest IQ people in the world. Hello, okay, so, like, obviously I'm not a white supremacist. These are two different races that are smarter than whites, okay? Not a supremacist, great. But people have to be willing to, what's the Richard Spencer line? I'm going to completely butcher it, but it's, you have to become, basically, you have to be willing to become a villain in order to make change in this society. And this is, gets back to the man question and the manner bund, because, you know, I work with certain people in various jurisdictions who are trying to get certain nationalist movements kind of up and running. And so, you know, I'm in touch with them. I'm interested to know what's going on, where they are, etc. And one of the ongoing themes is, like, I'm a big believer in white students unions. I believe we should spring up all across the country, because white students unions, you're in all of the universities, it's a great recruitment tool, and then you kind of have a presence within a university, that a safe space for white men, okay? Like, literally, this is what we need. Okay, but who is going to spearhead these white students unions? Who's going to do it? No, well, you know, we're young and budding people, we want to go, you know, get our jobs, etc. And at some point, you have to decide, are you willing to have skin in the game or not? Are you willing to make sacrifices for this or not? And I'm not saying, like, you need to, like, distance yourself from your family and never receive a paycheck. I'm not saying outrageous stuff. But I'm saying you got to risk it to get the biscuit, boys. You got it, because if not now, when? There's not going to be a job for you tomorrow, kids. There's not going to be a job for you tomorrow to finally get, and then, okay, you can flex your white male muscles then. You got to do it now. And even if that means you got to go underground to do it, do so. Start reading books. Familiarize yourself with not just the arguments, but truly understand what it is that you believe about the world and the trajectory that we are now headed. This is not about just tropes and jingles. Otherwise, we're just as crappy as everyone on the left and conservative ink of just, like, you know, do this, and, like, this is what we believe. Like, really, really, there's so much meat here on the dissident right to get your head around. There's such an overwhelming amount of literature and amazing folks online, such as yourself, Millennial Woes. I mean that really serious, Woes. I mean that really, really seriously. There's such a tremendous amount of resources for young people out there. You know, become Teflon. So when they call you these names, you say, bring it on, baby, debate me. And I mean that. There was, rather infamously now, I was disinvited from this Jordan B. Peterson, et cetera, panel. Okay, fine. Because I became too hot a property. So I just said, for, you know, interested parties, you know, I'm willing to engage in debate. So coming up in the next week or two, or perhaps maybe after the holidays, depending on when everyone is into it, I don't think Peterson's in it, but the other panelists, plus a few other folks, we're going to have a debate about race, IQ. I think about Jews as well. I'm not too sure. I think one of the panelists is Jewish, so he wants to talk about it. And I'm like, let's just do this. Like, let's just talk about these issues, and not because I want to fight you or, like, you know, like, conquer you. That's not what it is. It's just about either you're right or I'm right. And I'm at a point in my research right now and in my own philosophy and worldview where so far so good, and I think I'm right about a few things. And I've never felt more liberated to discuss these things, because, of course, after, I mean, in Canada, it was quite the sleigh ride after Charlottesville, of course, because I was the only, you know, Nazi Barbie that they had up here. There was no diffusion of attention as there was south of the 49th. And once every major media outlet called me every imaginable name under the sun, it was kind of like, well, I guess I can say what I want now, because how much worse can it get?
Oh, I know. It's like the equivalent of being doxxed.
Yeah, just, okay, cool. You know, that's my address. You got it.
At that point, you've got nothing left to lose, and so the only option is to start building and to keep building. So it is a liberation, isn't it?
It really is. And I also learned a lot, and sorry if this is like TMI. I don't necessarily enjoy talking about myself, but this is more of like a lesson for perhaps some of the younger audience too, who hasn't been, you know, gone through a life, you know, ordeal. And I've gone through much greater ordeals and bloody well losing my job, by the way. But this was quite the pruning experience, which is to say, I learned a lot about the people closest to me. And I'm talking about family here, because of course they're with you, hopefully. I mean, blood is the strongest bond of all, of course. And so they're with you through it all, or at least in the ideal circumstance. And thanks be to God, I've got a great family. But about friends who were in it for pragmatism, who were in it, you know, while the going was good, but it was not the same when things got a little bit difficult. So you learn a lot about that, and it was great because I learned that in my personal life, I learned it in my professional life, and it's been fascinating because some of the people that I now associate with, it's so amazing. I mean, so many of us are so damn poor now, and you know, don't have that many friends, but hell, we've got a fighting cause. We believe in our future. We want to secure a future, you know, and for ourselves and for our children. And there's no greater fight than that, to be honest. And so it's been completely liberating, to be frank. It really has been.
Well, I know exactly what you mean. You do lose friends in the real world, and you do, you know, if you've got a normal job, you might well lose that normal job, but then thankfully there are enough of us now that it can, in this community, in this dissident movement, that's not the end of the world, and you will have new friends. Mm-hmm. and there will be new projects and new jobs and all the rest of it. So it's not, it's not like it was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's not even like it was when I started the channel. The whole thing has really ballooned. And I actually think it's only at the beginning of that process. I think I've said before, I think we're on the verge of a huge, huge growth.
Yeah, no, and I think that all of that, I mean, is great. I know that there was some resistance as of late with, you know, this like trad thought gate and what have you. The unveiling of all of these people who feel more comfortable about what's going on. Of course, there are going to be people who are opportunists. Of course, we get that. I think that the majority of people within the movement, and I'm talking about the people who aren't necessarily putting their names and faces out on camera and out in media, sure, but the majority of the people in the movement can sniff out a fake, okay? Can sniff out people who are just in it for the shekels, so to speak, okay? Those people are going to be weeded out naturally. They're not going to be thought leaders. They're not going to be part of the philosophical intellectual vanguard. We get that. They might not even be the people on the streets, unless, of course, there are cameras there. But the very fact that people are coming out of their shells and saying, I think this about race. I think this about ethnicity. I think this about immigration and about the West and about Europeans and the settlement and founding and you know, greatness of our countries and our people. The mere fact that they're coming out, we should all feel incredibly white-pilled about that. We should all feel incredibly hopeful. There is so much work to be done, and this is a clear signal, grace, that the work is beginning to pay off as far as I'm concerned. So these are all great things. These are all excellent things.
Mm, indeed. You said that you'd like to talk about the male side of this, but have you already said what you wanted to say on that?
Yes, I think so. It was about the Matterbund. There's a couple of great pieces out there online about this. I don't think that I should be the one who makes an official video about this. I think that it's better that men do this. And even this pecking that's happening right now among the right, that the Richard Spencer, the Nick Fuentes, and so on in the world, I think it's very healthy. I think it's very good that men are just exercising their competitive spirit and trying to execute, you know, their will and their vision of the good society, etc. Are you trying to get me to say the 14 words, chat? Is that what this is? Okay, he wants.
No. It's no. I don't want you. It's just that the chat were asking you to. So I thought, well, should I propose that or not?
Okay. All right. Do you want me to do it?
We must. Yeah. Sure.
Secure the existence of our people and a future for white children.
Yeah.
Is that controversial though? Like, I don't see that's controversial. Is that bad? Like, I think it's controversial to say the opposite. Like, I think it's controversial to say, like, we must not secure our future and we must not secure the existence. Like what? Like that's the whole thing, is that once you just think about this, like, very, very simply and logically, you realize that it's not like, okay, like, haha, rah, rah, but like, it's, these aren't sophisticated ideas at their most like basis point. Like, we want to survive.
Mm. Exactly. Exactly. The chat is going ecstatic that you said those words.
I'm sorry. I did it with such a big deal. I'm sorry. I'm a boomer.
No. It's It used to be. Let's put
Hi,
it this
everyone.
Way.
I love you all.
Let's put it this way. Those 14 words used to be more controversial than they are nowadays. And that's
when I was at Charlotte School, there were certain places you couldn't get into unless you recited it. That's not a joke. One day I'll write a book. No, I told everyone it was off the record for the entirety of that day. Except for the parts that were on the record and eventually cost me my job.
to get back to something you said at the start, this is so important, because when we are a minority in each of our countries, we are not going to be treated as we have treated minorities. You know, they moan all the time about how badly we've treated them, but the obvious fact is that they're going to be worse to us.
Yeah, of course, because the idea of individualism and the dignity therein, et cetera, and preserving all of that and wanting to treat everyone as, you know, even this Rawlsian conception of like how the welfare state should function, that we take care of the least well-off in society, all of that are Christian European ideals, right? Like this is not, that's why you don't see Africans treating other Africans like that, right? You don't see that because that's not the way. And this is something where it's like, look, here's the moral relativist in me. They can live that way. That's no problem. But let me tell you, they might live that way when you are a minority in their country. And look no further than the Boer farmers in South Africa to see how that plays out.
Oh, exactly. You know, so, I mean, you've got our respect for the individual and our compassion, which I think is fairly unique to us. Certainly our obsessive altruism is unique to us. And then the other factor, which means that we will not be treated that well, is that that we are the previous majority being supplanted, effectively being conquered. So even if it happens in inverted commas peacefully or not, it's still conquest. It's still being taken over. So they, you know, when our grandchildren are minorities in their countries, you know, the Muslim overlords or whatever it is are not going to look kindly on them and say, oh yes, we'll have to help them out.
Look, I'm part Greek. My people lived under Ottoman fist for some 400 years. It wasn't great. And unfortunately, you know, they're headed to the same place, frankly, where maybe not de jure, but de facto, the majorities in several of the islands right now are Muslims. They're the ones who are giving the dictums in society. And just like every other place in the entire world, it's led to a phenomenon of white flight. And it's happened. I mean, you want to talk about being a minority in your own country? That's what's happened to all of the great metropolises across Canada, rather.
And in Europe as well. I mean, we're not at minority status yet, but we're certainly, I mean, you can see it coming. There's no doubt about it. Berlin, Nuremberg, Copenhagen, Stockholm, Amsterdam, Cologne. It's the same fucking thing everywhere you go. The only place I didn't see it was Vienna. But apparently that was an optical illusion because, they're just all in one place together. So, this is a reality, and as you said at the start, it's starting to become undeniable.
Which is good and bad, and that's why I try to remain optimistic, because the thing is that, you know, it just takes a switch to flip in someone's, you know, mind or experiential world for them to come to our side. So while things are getting worse, it's red-pilling people like crazy. I think Coach Red Pill put out some sort of a list of, like, the top YouTube channels when it comes to these overall estimates based on the traction, I guess, of new subs, etc., just for the month. And I noticed out of like the top 15 or 20, like half of them had the words red pill in there. And I know it's like a bit of an overused term these days, whatever. But to me, the new subs are going to these channels. I think you were in the top 10 as well. You know, the new subs are going to these channels. There is, like I said, an illumination of political consciousness that is occurring right now. And people are hungering and thirsting, as they always do, for the truth. As they always do. And unfortunately, we've been sold counterfeit truth in this world. But the great news is, and this is where I become a little bit of a German idealist and Hegelian, if you will, and I know he was wrong about certain things, but I think he was right about dialectics and not in the Marxist sense, in the purely Hegelian sense. He talked about how, you know, for every thesis, there will be an antithesis, and then some sort of new synthesis will occur. The thesis that we have had rammed down our throats for the past 60, 70 years, politics of multiculturalism and mass migration and the absolute dehumanization of the white male and psyche, the absolute evisceration of the family and of what it means to be male and female, all of these things. That has been the thesis for 60 damn years. Now, bam, the pendulum is swinging to the antithesis. We're going to get it wrong at certain times. We're going to sway a little too far sometimes, but that's okay because we are re-establishing order, because all of that was chaos. What we were fed was chaos, and that was deliberate. From a spiritual standpoint, it was the evil one. From a purely temporal standpoint, it was from people who want bigger government and control. And so they've sown chaos into our daily lives so to create a crisis to which they could then become the answer. We need to restore order. Order in the individual, order in the group, order in the home, and then, yes, order as well at the political level, at the national level. Frick international politics. Frick it all. I said this to someone who studied bloody well international law at university. Frick it all, okay? It is just about the nation, and it is about individuals as functioning within the group, functioning within society. We are social creatures. We are not all just islands unto ourselves, okay? This is not, what was that movie with Wilson the Ball and Tom Hanks? I'm not great at movies. Anyway, that's not real life, okay? Real life is us. Communicating, socializing. That's how political theories first came to be, because all the great political philosophers were able to hone in on this amazing human thing. And it was the fact that we are social creatures, right? So realizing the individual through these social functions in our society, whether it be through small groups, through family, and through service to the nation. And we have gotten rid of all of that. It was, how can the nation serve me? And by nation, I basically mean entitlements and, you know, far away lobbied corporatist offices more so than any sort of a nation state's, you know, helm, so to speak. So these are, I can't remember which philosopher said, pray never to live during interesting times. These are interesting times. But
that was a Chinese philosopher, wasn't it?
Was it? It's very possible. I'm not oriental philosophers, to be honest. My sister, she's great. She's a philosopher. I mean, she's very good at this sort of stuff. The medievals and the Asians, and I'm more of like a, I like the continental philosophers. I'm not going to lie. I do like the continental philosophers. And I like a lot of the ancients as well, obviously, Aristotle. So anyway, I'm sorry, that was a quick tangent over there. Pray never to live during interesting times. These are interesting times, but I'm excited about it because of the fact that it's not interesting for the sake of evil. This is interesting for the sake of conquering evil. This is interesting for the sake of fighting against lies and just absolutely of shining it with truth. And we have to be bold. We have got to participate because, like I said, if we don't do it, absolutely zero other groups, people, or states are coming to save our asses. So it's time that everyone, white man, if you are watching this, wake the hell up. Go to your university, start a white students union, start meeting with buddies, go to pubs, start talking about books, start a bloody book club. I'm not even kidding. As like lame as it sounds, it's macho. I guarantee you it's macho. You're reading about some of the greatest mentors ever who have literally dedicated their entire lives to how to fix problems. And nothing here is completely unique. There are threads that we have seen through history before. And so go and like read with people, talk to people about this, red pill your families. Like we need to get all hands on deck, and no amount of participation is too small, because again, we're seeing our numbers increase and we're seeing people come out of their shells and say, look, folks, I'm not afraid anymore. Call me whatever the hell name you want. And this is a time for strong men. You cannot be weak in this. You cannot be. And women, support your men. Women, go forward and help red pill your families as well. And I know for me, I'm getting married soon. I'm looking forward to popping out some babies. I'm looking forward to I need a break, guys. I need you guys to go out there and start all of these groups, which hopefully my children will one day be a party to and better off for.
Excellent. Shall we leave it there?
Let's. I appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is, you've really just seized the floor, as it were, and I've just sat back and asked you a few questions.
I apologize. I'm like a balloon. If you give me any amount of space, I'll just fill it up. I apologize.
No, that's not a complaint.
This is a lot of fun. I hope everyone had fun in the chat as well. I glared over every now and then, so I love you all. It's very cool that you guys spent your Friday night here. That was very, very cool. I really do appreciate it. And Woes, I love it too. I look forward to the time. Oh, Woes, before I let you go, I totally have to tell you this one story, which I promised myself I'd tell you. About a month ago, or maybe more now, I'm walking along the Charles Bridge in Based Prague. And this one guy walks up to me, and, excuse me, are you Faith Goldie? I was like, yeah, like, hey, bud, like, we're in Prague, who are you, what are your parents? Oh, I'm from the UK, and I've moved here because, like, you know, they've got guns and no jihad. I was like, based, very cool. And I said, you're in the UK. I said, you must love Tommy Robinson. And he looks at me, he's like, I'm a, more of a millennial woes sort of guy. And I was like, tips hat. I know what you're about, man. So it was very funny. So you've got fans, as you well know, all across the world. But it was kind of this cool moment where there was Faith Goldie, millennial woes fan, walking across Charles Bridge, who uprooted his whole life. He brought his fiance to Prague because, of course, it is one of the last vestiges of great European civilization left. So I don't want to flee my country. I want to stay at mine. And so, I want to share that with you. Thank you so much, Woes. This was really cool. I had a lot of fun.
Well, we can do it again anytime you like.
I look forward to it.
Just let me know. All right. I think the chat loved it. And how many people? Yeah, 850 viewers just now. So that was great. Okay.
All right, God bless you. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Wait. Let's say it again. I want to see what they do.
We can't do this again. it has to be special. It has to remain special just the one time.
All right. Yeah, you're quite right. Okay, then. Well, this was...
One trick pony over here. We're bringing in Faith to say the 14 words. All right, then she's in it.
Okay. And now we've got to shut it down.
All right, God bless you, my friend. Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas, Faith Goldie. So that's it for tonight. And I think it's, I'm not doing any tomorrow night. And then we're back on Sunday night. So, okay. Excellent. Fucking hell. Thanks for watching, everyone. Bye-bye.